The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belvin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our show. It is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for 60 minutes of news, talk, information, interviews, comedy, music, and more, all by, for, and about the cannabis community. We come to you every weekday at 1 p.m. Pacific time to bring you the latest news from all around the country in our fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. And joining us from our virtual studio, our newsreader, my good friend and half-half sister, and the Pacific Northwest Boggle Champion of the World, Cannabis Carrie.
I don't know if I'd say that. I can kick your butt, Russ.
You can kick my butt, and therefore you must be really good. You are the Peggy Hill of Boggle for Astoria, Oregon.
Yes, that's right. I am Peggy Hill.
If you need a four-letter word, Carrie can find it for you. Let me just say that. Well, Carrie will be bringing us our news right after the first break here. So, Carrie, what are we looking forward to in the headlines today?
Well, it looks like Portland, Oregon isn't the only one that has a cannabis cafe. We're going to go to a new shop that opened up this week in America. We're going to go see that New Hampshire lawmakers are voting on a decrim bill today. And also, very exciting for me, the Justice Department released all of the budget requests for the 2011 year, and I'm going to put those through a fine-tooth comb, and today I'm going to report just on the DEA and what they want to do with your tax dollars.
All right. We'll check those headlines out. Stay on the line, Carrie. We'll be back in just a minute to you. Also, folks, today is our Irie Wednesday for our Daily Toker Tune. So at 20 after the hour, we'll be bringing you a great reggae tune called Kali Weed. I'm sure we'll all enjoy that. And at the bottom of the hour, 1:30 Pacific time, we will be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Science segment. You can ask him your questions on science, health, medicine, culture, history, anything you want to know about marijuana. Dr. Mitch probably knows, or at least knows, to tell you where to look the information up. So check that out at the bottom of the hour. We'll take your questions in the chat room at that time. Wait until 30 after, and we'll get to that. Also, at the end of the show today, a little bit more from myself, some things I've been thinking about for the cannabis community with respect to marijuana minors and messaging. It's a controversial topic, and a lot of people feel a lot of different ways about marijuana and minors. Should there be an age limit? If so, what age limit should it be? And if minors are caught with marijuana in a re-legalized world, what kind of probation or punishment should they be subject to? We'll also talk about that in the chat room as well. So if you have things to say about it, I'll be watching while I rant on at the end of the show. It's Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Check us out on our blog, the Stash blog, at stash.normal.org. You can register an account there and be able to access downloads of the Daily Toker tunes we play every day here. We'll be replaying the show at 3, 5, 7, and 9 p.m. Pacific, and in between you'll get an hour of random Toker tunes. Make yourself an account out there at Stick'em, and you can join our chat as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint case? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Oh, lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Just lie, don't hide it. Fire up right now.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Following in the footsteps of Portland's own cannabis cafe, a new private club in Williamston, Michigan has now opened its doors to medical marijuana patients and their caregivers. Monday was the first day of business for the Green Leaf Smokers Club, a new cannabis-friendly establishment in the medical marijuana state. The club also offers its customers coffee and baked goods, and it will be offering training for caregiver classes on and training for caregivers and classes on growing. And for patients, they will offer cannabis free of charge, although they do charge a $40 service fee for joining. The new club was formed by the Reverend Wayne Daggett of the Church of Compassionate Care. Ingham County Sheriff Gene Wigglesworth has been an outspoken critic of the new club. He is telling media outlets that the new business is only about getting together and getting high. He says if anyone calls it anything else, they would be lying. He doesn't understand why anyone would pay to smoke a joint in a club when they could more comfortably smoke one at home. He said that the township is currently looking into the legality of the new smokers club.
Well, this is an interesting development because on its surface, it does sound a whole lot like the Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe, open to patients only. There's a membership fee to join. It's kind of like an Elks Club where you can smoke weed. Where the difference happens, though, is in the messaging of the club. And this is something we need to remember here as marijuana law reformers, that while we understand the issues going on here, a lot of the general public doesn't. And they're scared. They're scared of marijuana. They've been trained to be scared of marijuana. At the Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe, they were very clear to make sure that they weren't trying to frame this as something that was solving people's medical needs. Because it really can't. I mean, you can't really distribute medicine like that in Oregon like you do at a dispensary. So they were very clear to point out that this cafe is about serving a social need. Rather than running away from the idea that, oh, they're going to say it's just about getting high, they went forth and said, no, this is about socialization. A lot of these patients, and this sheriff here that says, oh, well, why would they want to pay to smoke in a club? They could just smoke a joint at home. Well, he doesn't understand what it's like to be a medical marijuana patient. If you're a patient who's using any other sort of prescribed pharmaceutical, you can go to the ball game, you can go to the movie, you can go to the restaurant, and if you need to take your medicine, you can pop a pill or, at worst, go to the restroom and use your insulin, you know, shot or whatever it is that you have to do. But if you're a medical marijuana patient, you're a shut-in. A lot of these medical marijuana patients are already on disability, so it's not like they got a ton of money as it is to go out and see movies all the time or go to concerts all the time. But even at that, if they could, a lot of them can't be without their medicine for any longer than an hour. They can't sit still. They can't be in a place where they won't get nauseous and so on. So to provide them a place where they can have some sort of socialization is a mental health treatment at the very least, and a physical health treatment to boot. You know, we talked with Mr. Anonymous, who was on our show last week, who just gushed about the Cannabis Cafe, saying, boy, I've met so many people, it's been so good to get out. And I really do believe that, and I believe this Michigan Cafe is doing the same thing. However, there's a messaging problem that comes here. And when I read some of the accounts of this this cafe up in Michigan, I heard the words of read the words of this Reverend Wayne Daggett, who was saying, by opening this cafe, we're doing God's work. Messaging issue there. You know, we don't want to try to bring religion into it either. And I know there's a lot of folks that use ganja as a religious sacrament, and I'm not going to get on that rant right now. What I'm trying to say is if you're portraying this cannabis cafe as some sort of religious experience, that's going to bring yet another frame against you in trying to keep this thing open. So be careful. Go ahead and open up these cafes. I love that they're happening. But remember to message it as something that really is trying to suit a social need. Take that argument away from them by owning it.
New Hampshire lawmakers will vote today to decide if small amounts of cannabis possession will be decriminalized for adults and youth. The bill that the New Hampshire House will be voting on today would allow adults to get caught with less than 7 grams of cannabis to be subjected to a $200 fine and no criminal record, much like a traffic ticket. Anyone under 18 years old who was caught with that small amount would be subjected to a notification to their parents, and they would have to complete a drug awareness program. This move by the New Hampshire legislators comes only 7 months after New Hampshire's Governor John Lynch vetoed a bill that would have legalized medical marijuana in the northeastern state. The New Hampshire House passed a bill in 2008 that made possession a misdemeanor, carrying a $200 fine instead of a misdemeanor, that it might end up with a year-long jail sentence, and at the discretion of the judge in the case, the fine could have been raised to $2,000. That bill did not make an exception for minors, and Governor Lynch said that he would veto it because it sent the wrong message to New Hampshire youth. So on that note, the Senate killed that bill. Last year, a medical marijuana bill that would have allowed severely ill patients to use cannabis obtained through 3 state compassionate centers, dispensaries, was vetoed by Governor Lynch over concerns about distribution and cultivation. He said on the day he vetoed that bill that it did not clearly restrict marijuana use to only people suffering severe pain. In that case, the House overrode the veto, but the Senate fell 2 votes short of it passing. Supporters are vowing to bring it back in 2011. The current decrim bill is sponsored by State Representative Stephen Lindsey.
Well, you know, decrim, boy, this is less than 7 grams, $200 fine. That's a quarter an ounce, right? So less than a quarter, you get a $200 fine. Now, in a lot of other states that have decrim, it's a $100 fine. Of course, here at Normal, we believe that people shouldn't be punished at all for their adult use of marijuana. So it's one of those situations where, yeah, it's better than nothing, but, you know, it's still just the first step. Kind of like, you know, if you're repeatedly hitting your hand with a hammer and you stop, that's a good first step. Now the next step would be to fix the hand, right? Maybe throw away the hammer. But I'm glad this decrim proposal is coming up. I worry about Governor Lynch. You know, Governor Lynch is not a friend of marijuana in any way. So whether or not this will get past him will be interesting. The point about the people less that are below the age of 18 having to take a drug awareness course. Boy, you know, that always bothers me because, first of all, I don't believe marijuana belongs in the same category as drugs, right? I believe drugs are things that you make from plants and other sources, right? That drugs don't grow out of the ground. Plants grow out of the ground. So it always bothers me when marijuana is lumped into the drugs category. I'm not against teens getting some legitimate education on drugs and having drug awareness. Unfortunately, the drug awareness always ends up being like this.
Drugs are bad. You shouldn't do drugs. If you do them, you're bad because drugs are bad, okay?
So, you know, if they're going to get a real education on drugs, if they're going to be told, you know, the truth about marijuana and cannabis, and if they're going to be told the truth about the other drugs as well, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about this at the end of the show when I talk about marijuana minors and messaging, but it's an interesting topic, and we'll keep our eyes on New Hampshire.
The DEA, along with other agencies, released their budget request for fiscal 2011 this week. Interestingly, it shows that the total amount of marijuana seized by the agency has almost doubled from 2008. The Drug Enforcement Administration is reporting that in 2008, they seized 1,539 metric tons of marijuana, and in 2009, 980 metric tons. David Acello, a spokesman for the DEA, would not elaborate on the reason for the dramatic rise in confiscated cannabis, but he did say that several factors play into the amount that is seized on any given year. Now, the DEA's total budget request for 2011 is $2,088,176,000. Later this week, we will also visit the National Drug Intelligence Center, the Interagency Crime and Drug Enforcement Department, and the Federal Prison Industry Departments, and find out just how much of our tax dollars are being requested to prosecute our friends and families. The DEA states in this request that they do not investigate or target individual patients who use cannabis, but instead the drug trafficking organizations involved in marijuana trafficking. The word patients was put in quotation marks. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to see these budgets, you can go to justice.org, look up the 2011 justifications, that's what they call the budget, and you'll find a whole page of links for all of the congressional budget submissions for all of the departments and agencies that are under the Department of Justice. It's fascinating.
Gee, yeah, this is amazing. And they don't target the patients, huh? So who is it in California who they keep raiding? Who is it in Colorado that they keep raiding? Oh, yeah, dispensaries that are serving patients. But, you know, they don't target patients. And $2 billion worth of our taxpayer money? Just down the tubes? Oh, my God. The DEA is the biggest make-work jobs program the federal government has ever come up with, okay? This is welfare for cops, is what it is. It provides them an easy source of easy arrests to continue to pad their statistics. Most marijuana consumers, and by the way, we talk about the war on drugs. We're talking about the war on marijuana. There are so few people that use all the other drugs combined that it would not at all justify what they're doing. They just couldn't pull it off if there weren't the constant grist for the mill in the form of adult marijuana users. That's just the facts. If you look at all the numbers, half of all drug war arrests come from marijuana. When marijuana arrests happen, 89% of them are for mere possession only. They keep saying, oh, we only target the kingpins. We only target the big drug traffickers. Well, if that were true, wouldn't those numbers be reversed? Wouldn't 89% be for cultivation and sales and 11% be for mere possession? But that's not what we see in the statistics. In America, there are 22.5 million people who will use cannabis this year, 14 million who will use cannabis this month. By comparison, there's about 2 million people that will use cocaine, about 1 million that will use methamphetamines, and about 350,000 that will use heroin. There just aren't any numbers there for them to justify their huge budgets and the expense of all those helicopters and overtime they use for eradication. Because, of course, cocaine doesn't grow here. You know, coca leaves don't grow here in America, and you can't grow opium poppies here in America. So they have to go after something. They're going to go after the cannabis. It's a make-work jobs program. The DEA's budget could be one-tenth of what they're asking for, and they could easily take care of all of the illicit drugs that we think of as the hard drugs. Plus, with the money they'd be saving and raising from the taxation and regulation of marijuana, maybe we could have some federal agencies going after other crimes, like, say, that white-collar crime going on Wall Street and all those bailouts going out to bankers and all of our taxpayer money that disappeared in Iraq and all of our money that continues to disappear in government waste and fraud. Maybe they could start paying attention to that instead of dropping $2 billion to persecute Americans who, at the very worst, are harming only themselves, and in the case of marijuana users, maybe using medically, or if they're not using medically, they're not harming anyone. No one. They're not even harming themselves to much of a perceptible degree, at least in comparison to what we consider legal in this country, alcohol and tobacco. I'm looking your way. We'll keep our eye on the DEA, and like Carrie said, check out that the DEA's budgets. Check out the government's websites. Keep your eyes on the prize and see what they're doing with our money behind the scenes. All right, time to take a short break. It's 20 after the hour. We love you all, especially those of you out on the East Coast. It's a special 20 after for you. We'll be right back.
It's 20 after the hour. we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeverseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. All right, time for our Daily Toker Tunes for Irie Wednesday, and when you think reggae, you think Iowa. We're here with Johnny Reeverseed from Iowa. How you doing, Johnny?
Good. The snow's melting away, finally.
Oh, good. I'm glad you can finally get some ground underneath your feet. That's good to hear. And what's happening as far as Iowa goes with the Board of Pharmacy? Anything new developments on that you've heard from?
No, we're just basically there's not enough time for the lawmakers to deal with it this year, so they're brushing off till next year, which like basically it's an election year, so they're avoiding it.
Yeah, I understand how that goes. Well, what are we looking forward to for our Irie Wednesday tune today?
This is a band I found surfing around on MySpace. They're called Clear Conscience, and they're from San Francisco. There's all spreading positive vibes from east to west and north to south, and there's no denying the impact that they are creating out there. Clear Conscience began in 2006, and four albums later, they have made their mark and built amazing relationships with many classic reggae art legends. Their latest release, On the Rocks, has debuted at number 9 on the iTunes Top 100 Reggae Albums, with their other three albums gracing the Top 100 as well. Their current release features tracks with such greats as world-famous Half Pint, Dub Passenger, a.k.a. Daddy Scotty of Chapter 11, and Bad Fish. Each of their albums has something different to offer each listener, from straightforward reggae and dub to rock to a little hip-hop flavor. Their track New Love, which features Matt Velasquez of Revolution, is currently getting much radio play in California. New Love and today's toker tune, Cali Weed, can be found on their CD, Into History. You can learn more about Clear Conscience at myspace.com/clearconsciencedub, and you can purchase their music on iTunes. So let's fire up some Cali Weed.
All right, some Cali Weed. Thank you, Johnny Weed, for seed. And folks, if you want to get a copy of this song, log on to our blog at stash.normal.org. You can create yourself an account, and on that account, you can download these tunes. This is Cali Weed. It'll be up in about 2 hours. Coming from Oakland, glad to have that tune from Clear Conscience for our Daily Toker Tunes on Ivy Wednesday. Remember, log on to stash.normal.org, register your account, and you can get a download of this tune in about 2 hours.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, a brief look at today's cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tonight, Thursday, March 4th, the Wayne Westland Compassion Club is meeting in Wayne, Michigan. For more information, check waynewestlandcc.ning.com. The University of New Hampshire Normal is having their meeting at the MUB 334 building, and Philly Normal in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is having their open meeting at the A Space, 4722 Baltimore Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They meet always on the first and third Thursdays of the month. For more information, check out phillynormal.org. And this weekend, Saturday, March 6th, Central Ohio Normal has a meetup at the Clintonville Panera Bread Meeting Room. Check them out by visiting ohionormal.org. Also, Cleveland Normal's having their meeting on Saturday, a meetup at the Root Cafe in Lakewood, Ohio. For more information on all of these events, check out our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml/calendar.
The Rhodium Q36 explosive space modulator. That creature has stolen the space modulator.
Okay, we're having some difficulties here with the automating machine. Let's go there.
Have you considered medical marijuana?
Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, every Wednesday we are joined by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, professor at the State University of New York at Albany. Thanks for being here with us again, Dr. Mitch.
It's so great to be back.
Yes, yes. We had Dr. Grinspoon fill in for you last week. He did a fantastic job.
Not surprised. He's the expert. He's man.
He's the man. Before we get into the questions that are building up really quickly in our chat room, I did want to give you a chance to address something Paul Armentano had written up on the Normal blog. It seems once again we're hearing from the prohibitionists, especially on the other side of the pond over there in the United Kingdom, about the dreaded pot and schizophrenia psychosis link. I think Paul did a pretty good job of debunking that, but could you give people the quick talking points? Because they're going to hear it from their friends. They're going to hear it from other people in their area. What are the quick talking points they can use to shoot down that pot and schizophrenia thing?
The take-home message on this is pot doesn't make people crazy, but crazy people do sometimes smoke pot. If you take a look at the study that just came out, it actually looks just as much as if people who are experiencing mild psychotic symptoms turn to cannabis before they actually have a full-blown break than it does that cannabis is actually creating some kind of psychosis. Of course, we don't want folks being heavy users early in life, and if you've got a schizophrenic identical twin, by all means, stay away from the plant. But the bottom line is, this is not a major source of psychosis. Take a look at the rates of schizophrenia in every country in the world, and then look at their cannabis use rates. There's no covariation at all. And if you look at when pot has gone up and down in American history, even though it's varied a lot, the rates of schizophrenia have always been right around just a little less than 1%, no matter how popular cannabis is. Obviously, if this were a cause, we'd see a higher correlation.
Right. And also, there's the chicken and the egg phenomenon of, are people that are schizophrenic starting to feel the symptoms coming on, and they're turning to cannabis?
That's it exactly. The self-medication hypothesis is holding out in the latest data. It hasn't in every single study. When you collapse across them, too, I want to emphasize that the definition of psychosis is a little loose in some of these studies. So you could just be a mildly weird dude and end up in what they call the psychotic group. And then a paper that I put out a couple years back shows that some of these assessments of schizotypy, this kind of schizophrenia light, are actually biased against cannabis users because of just the way we talk or the way we view the world.
Well, Dr. Mitch, I got to assure people that I am anything but mildly weird. Okay. Let me give you one more question from myself. This one comes from a personal experience. I recently visited my doctor, checkups and all of that kind of such. And we found a hormone imbalance, plenty of testosterone, but a little too much estrogen. And she went on talking about how I need to lose weight. And I've got the big, beer belly, the 42-inch waist and such, and how the abdominal fat tends to lead to, more estrogen production. And I totally got that. But then she also said that I should really cut back on my cannabis use because cannabis has a feminizing influence and leads to gynecomastia. So, what can I tell my doctor to read or look up to get her some better information on the gynecomastia issue?
That is still coming up. Okay, gynecomastia is a condition where men develop breasts. There were four cases written up in the 1970s of guys who had gynecomastia who also happened to smoke pot. They left out the fact that they also ate a lot, drank a lot of beer, and did a whole bunch of other things that contribute to that. Yes, heavy cannabis use day after day does tend to increase estrogen levels. The animal studies give the animals dosages that are way beyond even the biggest stoner we might have listening. And it's a mild, simple contributor, but not a big one. The key issues are often body fat and exercise, which, of course, can both contribute to estrogen levels. And it's not at all the case that somebody grows breasts as a result of cannabis use. In part, the condition is rare enough that it's really hard to study. But the case studies that were published in the 70s somehow took on a life of their own, and that's just not what's happening.
Yeah, you should have seen me just stare at her when she mentioned that, because I was so I was so stunned, because in every other respect, she's such a great doctor, and she's actually really well-informed on most of the medical uses of cannabis and doesn't have a problem with my cannabis use other than that mention. So, of course, I'm going with the diet, the exercise, and We'll see how that develops. But enough about me. Let's get to the questions here from our chat room. They're piling up here. Carrie's probably destroyed her cut and paste fingers already. This first question comes from Chemical Reality, and this kind of goes along with what we were talking about, the pot and schizophrenia. He points out that according to the National Institutes of Health, daily alcohol use presented a 400% greater risk of developing a mental disorder than daily marijuana use. And that was a study from 1990. Is there more research to back that up? And when people are talking about these dangers of marijuana, are they really just forgetting to put things in perspective?
I recall that study quite fondly. The other one that's interesting that just came out of Israel is there's a doubling of risk of mental illness just from smoking cigarettes. And we never hear about that one at all. And, of course, it's rarely co-varied out of these studies of cannabis use and mental illness as well. I don't think that nicotine makes people crazy either. I just think folks who are at risk for a mental illness often turn wherever they can in order to improve energy or do whatever they can with whatever's available. But, again, here's another example of a common everyday substance that contributes to or is at least correlated with symptoms that never gets mentioned. One thing I noticed a lot when I lived with schizophrenics in graduate school was if they drink too much caffeine, they start cranking out the crazy thoughts and ideas right out of their mouths, just like anybody else who gets a little too caffeinated. Again, we don't see any covariation for caffeine in any of these studies.
All right. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany in our cannabis science segment, taking questions in our chat room here. And New Jersey Leaper has a question. He's been paying attention to the preliminary webpage info for the new New Jersey medical marijuana pages. And he says that it seems they're opening up the field to its treatment for severe or chronic pain, nausea, seizures, and severe and persistent muscle spasms. I made a note yesterday of how the New Jersey law is much more restrictive and requires much more interaction and confirmation from the doctors and such about the severity of your conditions. What advice could you give to reformers that are putting together these medical marijuana laws as to what sort of conditions should qualify for medical marijuana? Should it be a California style, anything a doctor says, or do you like these lists better?
What's interesting to me is how many other drugs that are prescribable are often prescribed for uses that don't necessarily have a big randomized control trial in their favor, and they're completely allowed to do that at their own discretion. You publish a couple of case studies on how some oddball antidepressant also treats anxiety, and suddenly everybody's allowed to prescribe it for that. How come cannabis is any different? And sure enough, if you discover that smoking cannabis helps some disorder you have that is so rare that nobody would have a randomized clinical trial on it anyway, why not give the position where the physician gets the opportunity to prescribe that anyway? What if you had trichotillomania, this outrageously rare disorder where you pull your own hair out of your eyebrows or other parts of your body? It's incredibly rare. It would be impossible to get a big randomized controlled trial of that. And yet, if it helps you, why not go back and forth with your physician and figure out if that might be a good use? Instead of trying to have only a list of disorders that we have definitive proof on, why not have the definitive proof be your own experience?
That's funny you mentioned trichotillomania. I actually have members of my wife's family who have that disorder. I wonder if the cannabis could possibly help them. We'll have to check that out. Another question here comes from Mikey Zero. He wants to know your general opinion of the medical marijuana movement, and do you see that as helpful or harmful to the overall legalization movement?
All in all, I like keeping these separate because they really are separate issues. I feel like, you know, helping the sickest of the sick has got to be a top priority. We've got literally 70 to 80% of the population behind us on this, and let's make sure those folks get whatever they need for relief, particularly when we're talking about, you know, age-related wasting and cancer, chemotherapy-related anorexia and stuff like that. Oy, you know, let's not wait on that. Let's give these folks a chance. But I feel like adult use is a separate issue, and I like the idea that medical use will perhaps get folks more familiar with the plant and help them realize its harmlessness and then have that be a stepping stone towards it. But when I bring that up, sometimes, you know, prohibitionists get really freaked out, like this is all a red herring, and that's not the case. The medical data are quite compelling, and we need to treat that as a separate issue.
Yeah, I always find that cannabis suffers from the problem of people trying to put it into a box that it doesn't fit in, right? You could put it in the medical box, but it's more than a medicine. You could put it in the intoxicant or the inebriant or relaxant box, but it's more than that as well. I think it kind of deserves its own box.
I think there really aren't any other psychoactive substances that quite fit in the same way. And in fact, it's the only plant we have that really works in the cannabinoid system the way it does. It really is unique.
Yeah. Question now from Lord Bonghitter. Love that name, Lord Bonghitter. And this is something we've been discussing in the chat room for a while. It has to do with minors and marijuana. Here at Normal, we're always talking about ending adult marijuana prohibition, but there's an implication there that says for minors, they will still be punished if they are caught with marijuana in a re-legalization scheme. So Lord Bonghitter wants to know what you think about pot being against the law and whether or not punishment or cages even for minors using cannabis after re-legalization should be appropriate.
I'm not a big fan of punishment as a learning strategy in any domain. I think the opportunity to intervene with folks who are heavy problematic users early in life isn't something I want to miss. And I don't think the United States is comfortable with the idea of minors having legal access to cannabis except for in medical situations. So I'm okay with that. What I'm hoping is instead of punishment, there would be an opportunity for treatment. Hey, why is it you're smoking pot every single day in such enormous amounts? Let's talk about alternative ways to get to the end result you want to get using cannabis. If this is masking teen depression, which is extremely popular and common and something that people would obviously want to turn to cannabis for, we might find a much more effective behavioral treatment, for example, that in 3 months of, you know, concerted effort, you realize, hey, I'm actually feeling even better without the cannabis and doing these alternative activities. And now, gee, I don't want to smoke pot all the time. The dirty little secret is, even in the Freed data, the data that suggests that heavy use early in life might lower IQ, the folks who only got high once a week, their IQs were fine. And if we actually said, hey, occasional use is probably not bad for teens, of course everyone would freak out. But it is not the disaster that, say, binge drinking is. And now we've got to keep that perspective. Yes, it'll be illegal for minors, but the punishment should not be a punishment per se, certainly not imprisonment or heavy fines, so much as an opportunity to get a better intervention.
Okay, great answer on that, and we'll talk more about that toward the end of the show with my opinions on the issue. Question now from Destruction wants to know, it says his mom has sleep apnea and uses this Darth Vader-like sleeping mask to help with it. Could cannabis help replace the mask and the expensive parts you have to replace in this mask?
As it turns out, cannabis's impact on sleep is fairly reliable. It may not be THC so much as cannabidiol, another cannabinoid that isn't as psychoactive, so there may be a cannabis-based medicine that could be helpful. The problem is sleep apnea often comes from a whole set of different contributors, so you can't know if it's going to work until you try it. Even then, I feel like if you've got it so badly that you need that machine, often cannabis won't be enough. So it's an interesting adjunct to the treatment, but it may not be a good replacement.
Okay. Question now here from Free Can. Real simple here. We've talked about the grit weed, where unscrupulous dealers are adding little glass pellets to marijuana in order to increase the weight. And we've talked about, you know, molds and fungus that can get that can ruin a plant crop. Free Can wants to know, does vaporization eliminate the dangers of grit weed or molds?
It's going to depend on the source. Now, obviously, if there's, you know, big pieces of aluminum like we saw over in Germany a couple years ago, or ground glass, that's going to be more problematic because that small pieces of ground glass might get through. Nevertheless, the mold, it's going to definitely get through. Moldy cannabis is just no good. You gotta pitch it. And in fact, the prevention of mold, I mean, we've gotten into sometimes before. But the real bottom line here is knowing your grower and not feeling pressured to buy enormous amounts for fear that you're never going to get it again. And, of course, a tax and regulated market would be a great way to get around these problems.
Okay. Cameron Field has a question. Do you know if cannabis can be used to treat adult or ADHD?
So I've now had literally 22 people email me saying, yes, this really does help. I don't have any published data on it, and I'm looking into trying to publish a few case studies. The problem is I feel like the current treatments for ADHD, things like the heavy stimulant drugs, Ritalin, Adderall, and things like that, are probably just as bad, if not worse, than cannabis, so I'm kind of stuck. Here's a situation where it probably would work on an individual basis for some folks and not others, but we're not going to know until we get more research done.
Okay. Question now. This is also from Chemical Reality, and he says he's heard of people being allergic to cannabis to the point of anaphylactic shock. Is that true? Can you be that allergic to cannabis? Is that possible?
I haven't seen responses as severe as, say, the response of people who are allergic to peanuts,
yeah,
eating peanuts or things like that. I have met a meaningful subset of folks who report nausea and even vomiting in reaction to cannabis, and obviously they shouldn't use it. So it's distinctly possible, although I haven't heard of a reaction that's quite that severe.
Okay. I want to remind folks, too, we're not going to be able to get to all of the questions that are piling up here. You're very popular, Dr. Mitch. If people want to email these questions to Dr. Mitch Earlywine, the email address is 420research@gmail.com. 420research@gmail.com, and we'll see if we can help you through email. Let's get to another question, someone new here. Kaserink had a question. He says he's a 19-year-old male, 6'2", 155 pounds, really, 6'2", 155, wow, and wants to know, I love this question, how much weed does he have to smoke to overdose?
2 pounds.
2 pounds?
2 pounds. If he can smoke 2 pounds all in a row, he would risk toxicity. But if he's got 2 pounds and he smokes it all of his friend, all to himself, he deserves to die.
You got to share there, Kaserink. You got to share, man. Okay. Let's go to our last question here from the NorCal. Oh, wait a minute. We got a couple more. All right. I'll two or three questions here if I can get them in real quick here. NorCal Kid wants to know, what do you know about Cannabis Science? And I think that's the company she's talking about, Cannabis Science, Inc. What do you know about their initial cannabis-based pharmaceutical for FDA clinical trials, and how do you think acceptance of similar products by the FDA is changing with the medical and recreational legalization movements?
I'm on the board of Cannabis Science, and I'm still finding out the details on this, so I can't really elaborate on that too much. I do think the FDA is suddenly opening up ideas about cannabis-based medicine, but it will probably not be smoked cannabis or even vaporized because they're apprehensive about dosage, which is pretty ironic for a substance that requires 2 pounds to kill a 155-pound guy.
Right.
So I think that things like the sprays, tinctures, edibles are probably on the horizon, but it's still going to be an uphill battle. It's very, very difficult to get approval for these trials, and it's really, really difficult to get the DEA to let you go ahead and have the cannabis.
Sure. And is there any time limit on that 2 pounds? Do you have to do it in a certain period of time?
Yeah, exactly. You got to do it all right away.
Right away.
You can't like take a break.
One big hit, I suppose. All right. This next one's not really a question, more of a statement, but it's something we've talked about before, and maybe you can elaborate a little bit. Hunter says that most studies about cannabis turn out good. That is why the U.S. does not test marijuana. What do you have to say about that?
What's funny is when you look in both the psychological and the medical literature about cannabis or marijuana per se, it's usually talking about the horrible outcomes it creates. And then you'll read a little bit closer and you realize they left out cigarettes or they left out alcohol or they left out some alternative explanation. But when you start searching the cannabinoid-based drugs, at least on Medline now, you're seeing some wonderful impacts, including like things we've discussed with neuropathic pain and nausea and things along those lines. So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a change in the terms, and suddenly everyone's going to be more willing to do these kinds of studies, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Last question here from Real Ohio, H-I-G-H-O, Real Ohio, who asks mentions that his father is a diabetic with kidney failure, and he states that when he smokes, he can urinate a bit more than usual. Have you ever heard of that with folks that have kidney failure?
So this is actually the third person I've heard who just mentioned some kind of difficulty in urination from a number of different sources. This is, as you can imagine, not a highly investigated area. And often in response to antihistamines and a few other of the medications that are prescribed for various disorders, you'll get this problem with urinating. And it's funny that he's at least the third case I've heard of who said this has improved. The keys on that are that there are just so many different contributors. There may only be a subset of folks who it really helps.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap things up with that. And I do have one comment from Mr. Spoff, one of our regulars. He's calling you on the 2 pound answer and says, meet me in a lab with 2 pounds and we'll get to the bottom of this.
I will have 2 pounds for each of us.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday for our Cannabis Science segment. Send your questions to 420research@gmail.com. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Here's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Welcome back, everybody. 54 after the hour, and wanted to talk to you a little bit about marijuana
Normal,
and minors.
Unlike any other marijuana or drug law reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists who are peaceably assembling to petition our government for a redress of our grievances, specifically regarding our inalienable right to the pursuit of happiness through the use of cannabis for medical, social, and personal reasons. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we are pro-marijuana. Every Monday, we take some time to talk to the citizens in local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition in this segment we call Grassroots Activism.
All right, we're going to keep it short right now. We're running up the top of the hour here. Before I get too far into it, though, I want to remind you to check out change.org and vote for the legalization questions that are out there. We got 9 days left, and the question is hovering around 7th to 9th place last time I checked. There's an easy URL to get there now. Go to the web, type in miniurl.org/legalization. That's MINIURL. miniurl.org/legalization. Now, I had planned to talk a little bit about marijuana and minors at this point because I got a couple of emails from folks and did some chatting up late last night on the topic of marijuana and minors. And I think Dr. Mitch kind of stole some of my thunder because he said a lot of the things that I wanted to say about the subject. Of course, I believe that marijuana should be an adult activity primarily. And when I'm speaking for Normal, I have to speak about that as, you know, adults only, usually 21 and older. And that's really a political consideration. When we look at the science about the developing brain and the use of cannabis, we find that once you hit about 18 years old, you're really pretty much set in your brain development, and the use of cannabis shouldn't be that big of an issue. But politically speaking, it's going to be pretty much impossible to sell an 18-year-old cannabis legalization age. And that has to do with people's fears of high school kids, because there's a lot of high school kids who are still 18, sometimes even 19 years old in high school, being able to legally access cannabis and then being able to distribute it to the other kids, the younger kids in the high school. So there's that concern. But again, those are political concerns, and I did get an accusation in chat about political correctness on Normal's part on this issue, in that we should tell the truth about that cannabis isn't that harmful for minors, and we shouldn't support cages for minors if they break the rules. Well, like Dr. Mitch says, we don't support that at all. Nobody should be locked up in a cage for cannabis, period. I don't care what age you are, I don't care what condition you have or don't have, or what religion you believe or don't believe, nobody should be locked up for cannabis. But I do like the idea Dr. Mitch floated of finding a minor with, you know, a lot of cannabis use and maybe using that as an opportunity to direct it toward understanding health issues, mental health issues, and so on. As long as that's a legitimate education about cannabis, not the, you know, drugs are bad education that they usually get. And personally, and again, I got to emphasize personally on this as Russ Belleville. I don't really have much of a problem with minors smoking marijuana at all. I have met so many people in our movement. I will give you one just because I know he outs himself on this. Rick Cusick, one of the publishers of High Times magazine, talks about at Boston Freedom Rally last year how he started smoking pot when he was 12 years old. And at first I cringe when I hear that. Oh, my God. But then I think, well, God, Rick turned out all right. Turned out to be a magazine publisher. He's a responsible father and tax-paying citizen. So he didn't turn out so bad, right? And then you look at how our society treats this, right? Kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge that our society gives to this. I mean, think about That 70s Show where the signature sight gag was a bunch of teenagers sitting in a smoking circle in the basement. That was a big hit for like 8 years, pardon the pun. So does our society really have that much of a problem with minors and smoking? It's something I'd like to talk about a little bit more, and if you've got some opinions on this, I'd love to read them because it's a very controversial issue. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. We'll discuss it some more. Also, check out our blog at stash.normal.org. Follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You're going, you're dying, you're rolling, you're smoking. paranormal show live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation. We're here every day, 1 p.m. Pacific, with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9.
We love it.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Yeah.